gentlemen, welcome back to a new installment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. I am without my partner in crime, my co-host this week, Parker Fleming. He's on vacation. How soft do you have to be to go on a vacation right when the NBA season's about to resume? How could he have not planned this a little bit better? But that's okay. I've been loading up the old blogger mule back, so to speak. I've been working pretty hard this week, as has the rest of the staff over at grizzlybearblues.com. And hopefully you're checking out our content. Hopefully you're subscribed to our podcast network, whether it is on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, however you check out Grizzly's content with us over at grizzlybearblues.com. Hopefully you are along for the ride as the NBA scrimmages have officially begun. We have NBA basketball back on our televisions and on our screens, which is something that we certainly can be excited about moving forward. Ways to get in touch with the podcast: you can follow me on Twitter at Joe Mullinax. You can follow the blog at SBN Grizzlies. You can also follow GBB Live itself at GBB Live. We have a great show for you this episode. Later on in the program, I will have the guys that make up our newest podcast at GBB, the Starting Five, on the call. They'll be really kind of looking at what the Grizzlies need to do in the absence of Justice Winslow. That conversation will be, or that point, I should say, will be the focus of the conversation there. But in this first segment, I wanted to bring on somebody that you're familiar with, more than likely, if you're listening to this podcast. Maybe you're not familiar with the fact that she is a GBBer. She is a writer for us over at grizzlybearblues.com. But you might be more familiar with her as one of the leading, if not the leading, fan accounts out there, Made in Memphis. We know her better at GBB as GBB writer Molly Morrison. How are you doing, Molly?
Hi. Wow, that was quite the introduction. I am great. I am glad to be here.
It's all good, Molly. You have to remember, I've been doing this for a long time. I think I started doing this when you were 12. Yeah, I'm old. It's okay. We're allowed to acknowledge
my... I started doing this when I was 12, too. So.
There you go. Well, there you go. We have that in common. Oh, man. Well, I'm happy to have you with us. And again, whether it's over at GBB as a whole, I know you and I have been talking about some content you'll be rolling out here in the next couple of weeks. Whether it's with us at GBB, yeah, obviously running the Made in Memphis account, you do lots of great things on social media and beyond. And I'm excited to get your take on the Grizzlies restart, because here we are. We are on the precipice, finally, of Memphis Grizzlies basketball. They play Friday against the Philadelphia 76ers, a pretty difficult matchup, to say the least, all of them, unless you're playing Phoenix or Washington. No offense to those fan bases, but those aren't the best squads.
Yeah.
There really aren't any easy games left for the Grizzlies. They're going to have tough scrimmages. They're obviously going to have one of the toughest stretches of seeding games starting July 31st, next Friday, against the Portland Trailblazers. I wrote a piece for the blog earlier this week talking about three questions kind of heading into the restart. And I'm just going to hit each of them one at a time here, Molly, and just kind of get your take on each one. The first question that I asked in the piece was, will the pursuit of success in the bubble override long-term franchise goals? And what I mean by that is, say Ja Morant, you know, he made an amazing highlight dunk. Brandon Clark threw an alley-oop pass to him. He caught it on one end of the rim and essentially dunked it on the other, which makes no sense. You have to see it on the video to believe that it actually occurred. Ja Morant is unbelievable, literally. But it's about, say Ja lands on one leg like he does sometimes, and he tweaks a hamstring or he strains his Achilles. God forbid something worse than that. And if it were January, maybe you sit him out for a week or two just to make sure he's healthy. But given the pace and what is at stake in terms of the Grizzlies holding on to that eighth seed in the playoffs, maybe you're a little bit more ready to try to force him out there before he's physically ready. I am very much against that. Okay, I think that they need to prioritize the long-term vision of this group and not put players like a Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., De'Anthony Melton, you know, up and down the list. Anybody that you perceive as being a long-term option for the Memphis Grizzlies, if they come down with a bump or a bruise that during the regular season, like again, January, February, around there, the dog days, they wouldn't be playing through, they shouldn't be playing through it here. Do you agree with that?
I agree with the point of not forcing Ja or whoever to play or to force playing after an injury. However, I don't separate this bubble time with our long-term success. I think right now we have to look at this as just a huge opportunity to start this continuous chapter of getting our team out there, of improving, of strengthening our chemistry. I don't look at it as like a separate entity than like what we're going to do afterwards. I think this is going to be a really unique, cool opportunity for our team to play in this environment. And I think playoff experience, some people might say, yeah, it's not that important, like whatever, like we're obviously not going to go far, so it's not the end of the world if we don't get that spot. But the way I see it, like, I want to get that spot. I don't think there would be anything bigger for us than getting that spot and being able to face LeBron and the Lakers in the first round. I mean, we would be everywhere, and I think it would be a really good chance for the world to, like, see this team and understand that, and just to get excited about us, because we're not like the team that people want. But I think that if we get ourselves in that situation, then they're forced to watch us and to pay attention to us. So I don't know if that, I kind of steered off, but yeah.
No, I think,
I don't know. I don't want to.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. And I don't want to make it sound like I don't want them to make the playoffs, because I do. And I agree with everything you just said about the experience and the opportunity to see greatness in LeBron James. You know, that's one of those moments. I go back to Michael Jordan's career and, you know, when he played against the Celtics, right? The mighty Celtics. And the Bulls lost in that series early in Jordan's career. But, you know, the Celtics were very impressed with what Michael was able to do. It was kind of like an arrival moment for Michael Jordan.
Exactly.
I'm not saying that Ja is Michael Jordan, obviously, but at the same time, I do believe that there's some correlation between having that experience to see a team that is close to the top of the mountain and a guy in LeBron James who has been to the top of the mountain, and you understand that's what greatness is. You get to experience it as an opponent, and you know what it's going to take to get to that level. My point is, I don't want to risk Ja Morant not being able to play in December or January, whenever the next season happens, because you tell him
because
to fight through an issue.
Turnaround.
There's a line to walk there.
But I think at the end of the day that Ja is a smart guy, and though he is a fierce competitor, he knows that he wants to be the best he can be. So I feel like he will do in the result, knock on wood, of anything like that happening, which I don't even want to think about. I feel like we could trust him and the team for making the right call. I don't think he would force anything if it meant getting anything big.
Sure. No, I think you're exactly right about that. We're talking with Molly Morrison of GBB, also of the Made in Memphis Twitter account. You can follow her personal account on Twitter, Molly Morrison at Molly Hannah M. Make sure you're checking her out there, and make sure you're following along with her and us over at grizzlybearblues.com as the season restarts. All right, so we covered question one. Here's question two, Molly. I ask in particular, and I'm interested who you're going to say, who must step up for the Grizzlies to make the playoffs? Again, they are currently the 8th seed. They're 3.5 games up on their closest competition, but there is a pretty high probability that there's going to be a play-in scenario where Memphis has to beat somebody at least once to secure that 8th seed. If they are the 9th seed, they have to win twice. There's lots of layers to it. Outside of the obvious answer, a Ja Morant, who's already very good, Jaren Jackson Jr., who's very good, Brandon Clark, who's very good. I write about ways that those players in particular can get better over on the blog right now at GBB, grizzlybearblues.com. But I decided to really, on Wednesday, focus heavily on Dylan Brooks. I wrote a lot of words, two full features, and Dylan Brooks is a major part of both of them. To me, the answer is Dylan Brooks, and it's a pretty simple reason why. When the Grizzlies win, Dylan Brooks shoots 45% from the floor, 19.1 points per game, 41.3% from beyond the arc. He has a plus minus of 8.5 per 200 possessions, and he has a net rating of 2, positive 2. Not bad. And in terms of shooting and scoring the basketball, that's really, really good. In losses, Dylan Brooks is 34.6% from the floor, only scores 12.3 points a game. He's 31.5% from beyond the arc. He has a plus minus of negative 10.5 per 200 possessions and a net rating, Molly, of negative 31. When he is really bad, the Memphis Grizzlies lose. When Dylan Brooks is good, the Memphis Grizzlies win. And that only becomes more fluctuated and focused when you lose somebody like Justice Winslow, who was supposed to be a key cog to the rotation in this restart. Now that he's not, it's not as simple as saying, oh, they'll just go back to the way things were. Because the 16 games before the season was paused, Dylan Brooks was not a good basketball player. And because of that, the Grizzlies struggled.
Yeah, what was it? What was the amount of points that it was like when he scored a certain amount, we would lose or we would win?
Sure. No, I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but just in the stats that I have in front of me, it's literally a 7-point difference per game almost between wins and losses. So if he's around 20, the Grizzlies are probably going to win. If he's around 10, they're going to lose.
There was some like crazy like specific stat about like when Dylan Brooks scores X amount, the Grizzlies have never lost. So I don't know if that ends up changing at some point, but I'm pretty sure that streak is still on. But that question, who has to step up? It's a good question. However, I'm going to kind of like twist that a little again, because I personally, I mean, I'm not like a huge numbers person. I like think number, I look at them and I acknowledge them. But for me, we are so deep right now, our roster, that I don't see it as this person has to step up. I see it as it's all about, you said, well, forget Ja and Jaren and Brandon. But to me, it's like, if they come out and like, I think their success will rub off on the other guys. So I think it's a matter of, yes, there are players. I, for one, like, am a big fan of Josh Jackson. I think he's going to have more opportunities now that Justice is injured. I am a fan of Dylan. I'm weirdly a fan of John Conchar, even though I don't think he is going to perhaps have that many minutes. I really was impressed when he was kind of having his time playing in the midst of injuries. I just think he is a very smart basketball player and kind of like doesn't make mistakes, weirdly. But in terms of who has to step up, I just kind of see it as like a unit. Like, I see if Ja and Jaren and Brandon are playing, I mean, I don't see like one person necessarily as the guy. I think Justice, if we did this interview a week ago, or I would have said Justice, because he was the guy that the big question mark, and he was the guy that had the potential to really add. But this team was already really starting to get in a groove in terms of chemistry. So I think honestly, it's important for this week of scrimmages, or however many scrimmages we have, is going to be huge in kind of figuring out what's working, what's not working. And I think it's just a hard question to answer before we really see kind of the rotations we choose and just what's working. And I really don't have an answer about one player that has to step up.
I will say this, the young staff over at Grizzly Bear Blues, because I'm the old person officially, I probably have been for a while, but it just really feels that way now. Everybody loves John Conchar and everybody loves Grayson Allen. And I don't fully understand why. Neither of them did anything. John Conchar, when he was extremely successful, he did a lot of that work against really bad teams. Chris Harrington in the Daily Memphian wrote about
the
how
was his best game.
That's one game. The Brooklyn Nets stand out in my mind. They're not particularly good. There's a lot of success that he had when he did play that was usually against teams that were not particularly good at basketball. And I think that one of the things that maybe throws off our perception, because you talked about the Grizzlies' depth a lot there, Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian wrote about this, and I've noticed it as well. The Grizzlies did a phenomenal job beating up on the bottom 10 teams in the league. I believe they were something like 18-3 against the 10 worst teams in the NBA. Eight of those 10 teams aren't a part of this restart, and the other two, Phoenix and Washington, that are a part of the restart, are not going to be on the Grizzlies' schedule. Against every other team that Memphis is eligible to play against, they're 14-28. Now, that doesn't mean that it's a death sentence. Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., as the season went on, I think Harrington went on to describe them as going 5-4 against teams, against like the Nuggets. You mentioned the Lakers game that they won. There's been times where there has been success against better competition. But I do think that we need to hold off on saying that, like, I mean, there's people at GBB that at times say this is the deepest roster the Grizzlies have ever had. That's just not true, in my opinion. And maybe it's because I'm old and I remember, you know, Kosta Koufos and people like that a little bit differently than maybe some young people do. But there was a time where Memphis was a legitimate 11 or 12 deep and they were winning 55 games. We have to keep the perspective that this Grizzlies team is mediocre in terms of their record. They're 32-33.
Well, here's what I think about that. I think when I say deep, I don't mean deep. And yeah, you're talking about Kosta Koufos, guys like that. These guys were deep with a lot of young potential talent. So when I say we're deep, and that's what's exciting and also kind of a question mark, is that we have different players to try out. Not we have different players that are going to be sure, like, yes, like we know this is going to work. I just mean when I say we're deep, it's kind of like we still have a lot of players that have potential to be really good. So that's why I'm saying in terms of who has to step up, I think we have a lot of options. I'm not saying we have necessarily as many like guarantees, but I think we are definitely deep in young potential talent. So in times like this, I think it'll be important to really try that out and see
where it goes. And I do think that that's an important perspective to keep, right? Because Memphis isn't supposed to be here in the first place. They're supposed to be one of the eight teams that wasn't invited to the bubble, right? We were supposed to be having a conversation at this point, you know, without a pandemic, you know, was it worth it to convey the first round pick and not taking one of the top 10 players in this draft class that most folks think is pretty weak at the top? That was supposed to be the conversation we're having. The fact that they're even in the mix to be a playoff team really is remarkable. And I do think that's important to keep in mind. Like when I say that they are mediocre, it is through the lens of, you know, they were supposed to be really bad. So yes, they're a mediocre basketball team and they're fighting for an 8 seed and in a likely, you know, butt kicking by the Lakers in 4 or 5 games. That's the probability. But the fact that that's even a conversation is a compliment to an extremely young team that's only going to improve moving forward. So I think we're saying the same thing, just in a different language or different vernacular, maybe. We're finishing up here with Molly Morrison. She does a great job on social media. She also is a contributor to GrizzlyBearBlues.com. You may know her from Made in Memphis at Made in Memphis 1. But again, we know her from her work with us at GBB. Follow her personal account at Molly Hannah M. on Twitter. Last question for you here, Molly, and we'll get you out of here before I get with the starting five guys. The last question that I posed in the article: who should Memphis fans fear most in the bubble? And I use fear in air quotes or in quotations because I wrote about earlier in the summer, the only thing that the Grizzlies really need to fear is themselves in terms of taking care of what they can do to maintain their lead and get into the playoffs, which should be their ultimate goal. But there are three legitimate threats to them accomplishing that, and then maybe 3.5 if you count the Spurs. Again, sorry, Phoenix Suns, you're not getting there. Enjoy your trip in Florida, and then you're going to go home in a few weeks. I rank them as follows, going from 3 to 1. So 3 is the least threat, 1 is the biggest threat. I said Portland was number 3 because their schedule is pretty tough. They don't really have anybody to defend Ja Morant. Obviously, they have Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum, two very talented scorers, but the Grizzlies can throw different types of defenders at those players. Portland doesn't really have anybody to throw at Ja. And you can argue that they don't even really have somebody to throw at Josh Jackson off of the bench if he gets going, if Josh is that reserve that we were talking about a little while ago. So Portland's
hey,
big.
Hey, I mean, don't forget Melo. You know, that's the big one.
I'm going to forget Melo. Sorry. I'm not, especially Melo as a small forward. Melo as a power forward was a little bit more concerning.
I agree. I'm in the... I'm not in the Melo train either,
right.
So we can agree on that.
I mean, I do not see him defending particularly well as a three, and I think that's going to hurt them. But they have to do that because they lost Ariza. I understand their logic.
Yeah.
But anyway, Portland's big, but they're limited on the perimeter. Grizzlies can probably get a stalemate between Hassan Whiteside, Nurkic. You know, again, Portland's good there, and they have good guards too, but I think the Grizzlies can win outside the paint because of their depth. So I'm not as scared of Portland, and obviously Memphis gets them in that very first game. The New Orleans Pelicans I have second, and I have them second because they have a roster that is kind of in flux with the question of Zion Williamson and his availability. They have beaten the tar out of the Grizzlies this season at times, but I do think that there's a team that plays NOLA twice that is a bigger threat to Memphis in particular in a play-in situation. Because the Grizzlies have seen them four times. Memphis won one of the four games. But again, I'm comparing it to Ja Morant, the best player for the Grizzlies, against what the opposing team would throw at them. The Pelicans have Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday. They have defenders that could impact Ja. But especially Lonzo, he's not going to take over a game offensively. He's not going to exhaust Morant as a threat on that side of the court. The Sacramento Kings have De'Aaron Fox. And De'Aaron Fox terrifies me because he has repeatedly bested Ja Morant. Ja is not as good as De'Aaron Fox is right now, and that's okay. Ja's a rookie. Fox has been in the league a while. It makes sense that Fox would be better, but whether it's Fox, obviously they have Bogdanovich, Buddy Hield, Kent Bazemore, Harry Giles. They have a lot of things going for them, and they get the chance to play the Pelicans twice. So if the Kings are able to knock off New Orleans twice, and then they take advantage of the rest of their schedule, like Memphis plays Milwaukee in that last game, so the Bucks might be resting Giannis. The Lakers are the team that play the Kings in their last game. They might be resting LeBron and Anthony Davis. The Kings could very possibly make this play-in, and I'm not confident in that matchup for Memphis. So while I think the Grizzlies can make the playoffs and maybe even avoid the play-in if they have a good run of seeding games, the team that the team that I'm most nervous about seeing line up against the Grizzlies in a play-in situation is the Sacramento Kings. Do you agree with that? Do you think it should be New Orleans or Portland or maybe even San Antonio? Greg Popovich does loom large, even though they're a little bit banged up.
No, I don't agree with that. So it comes down to, at the end of the day, I think we're going to have to be in a play-in game. Just thinking of the scenarios, I don't see it really possible with the difficulty of our schedule that we won't be in a play-in game. So then it comes down to who do you least want to play in a playing game? For me, I want, at first when I looked at that question, I did say Sacramento. I have a lot of doubt and maybe unfair doubt towards Zion playing. I was there when he got injured in summer league. I was in Vegas when that happened. So in the back of my mind, I always just kind of assume something's going to go wrong. And that he's not going to be healthy. So if I just ignore that, throw that out, assume Zion will play, I think that the Pelicans are who I would be the most afraid of. And I hate saying that because I love the idea of slandering Pelicans fans. It's fun. I love to do it on Twitter. I think it comes down to, you know, when you compare, yes, they have Lonzo who's improving. They have Zion. But then even deeper than that, I think it comes down to the veterans that they have in comparison to we really don't have. I mean, a question I have is, do we know anything about if Justice Winslow will be at the bubble?
I believe he's staying in the bubble. I think he is staying with the team, but he's not going to play. They've ruled him out for the remainder of this season.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was any rules about whether he couldn't even be there. But so he will be there. But I think that they have Drew Holiday and J.J. Redick as their veterans. But not to mention who, you know, have that experience, that extra experience. But not to mention Brandon Ingram, who is really coming up, and Zion. And also, we haven't seen a Zion, Jaren, or Brandon matchup yet. When we've played, is that correct?
I believe so. I would have to confirm that, but I think Zion missed the Martin Luther King Day game that the Pelicans beat the tar out of Memphis. And then I think the other time when the Grizzlies played Zion, I think you might be right. I'm not sure Brandon and Jaren played in that game.
Yeah, I don't recall us ever having our bigs, or besides obviously Jonas, having Jaren or Jonas is the veteran that we have, I would say. And then Justice is injured. I don't know what he'd be considered, but yeah, going back to, we haven't seen that matchup, and I think that could be a pretty terrifying matchup. So I don't know, and I think they have the same kind of fire in them, maybe not quite the same because they're not the underdog like we are, but they're young and they want to play the Lakers. They know everyone wants them to play the Lakers. The one thing with the Kings, though, that obviously you bring up is Fox. Him versus Ja will be very interesting. We've seen it, but I think that will be interesting because they're both such like quick, dynamic players. Yes, I do think you're correct to say that the Trailblazers are our third. I'm not quite as worried about them. I feel like they're kind of a lot of talk, typically, rather than maybe being a threat to us. But I would say that a fully healthy Pelicans team might be the scariest thing to our team.
They're certainly the deepest, right? I think that's fair to say. And I guess just De'Aaron Fox abusing Ja Morant the way that he did at times when they played really just sticks out in my memory. I'm not sure there's a wrong answer. Because again, Damian Lillard is the best player of all the guys we just listed. He is the best player, and you've physically seen him literally end series for the Blazers. Like, he has ice running through his veins. You've seen CJ McCollum and the offensive skill set that he has. The Pelicans are still technically potential. The Kings are still technically potential. And Memphis is still technically potential. We've seen what Portland can do. They made the Western Conference Finals last year. So I think that's another reason why people hold them in high regard. So I think you can make an argument for all three. Kings just really stand out in my mind. But you're exactly right about the Pelicans, too. It's going to be fascinating to watch it play out. Molly, thank you so much for your time. As always, I appreciate you joining me on the show here. Make sure you're following Molly on Twitter at MollyHannahM. And then, of course, over at Made in Memphis 1. Molly, down the road, we'll have you back on, of course.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
When we come back, we're going to have the Starting Five podcast on with us. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Monax. In the first segment, I was joined by Molly Morrison. Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation, taking a look at some of the questions that we need answered heading in to the Grizzlies restart, which of course begins in earnest on Friday with the Philadelphia 76ers scrimmage. But of course, it really kicks off July 31st with the first meaningful game for the Grizzlies in essentially in 4 months when they take on the Portland Trailblazers. But we didn't talk about one major question, one that I think that is more important than some people on social media have let on. I had Fletch and Doc Holliday and some other folks. I know Chris Vernon talked about it on his show today, apparently. We're recording this Wednesday and Thursday. So on Wednesday's show, Vernon apparently talked about, you know, dividing up the minutes now that Justice Winslow is gone. Essentially, not necessarily Vernon, because again, I haven't heard it, but other folks kind of downplaying what Justice Winslow's absence will be because of the fact that he hasn't really played for Memphis yet. That discounts all the practice that they've had, all the training, all the scheme. So we're going to talk about that particular question, the Justice Winslow replacement, with a group of guys that I'm really excited to have a part of the GBB family. They are the new podcast that will be debuting, I believe, next week. But at the very least, here in the next 2 weeks. The goal is next week, I know, for the restart. But it's the gentlemen who make up the Starting Five podcast. That's Parrish, Skyler, Trevor, Tev, and Sheedy. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing this evening?
Great. Man, amazing. Doing amazing.
Great.
Doing great.
Well, I'm excited to have you guys in the GBB family. As I said, we continue to expand our podcast network. I'm really interested in what your guys' show is going to be. I know you guys have been talking with Parker Fleming. You've been setting up beats and obviously the new imagery, the new logo for your new podcast. Parrish, I'll start with you here. What should folks expect from the Starting Five when it drops here in the next week or so?
Just a very cultured podcast, unbiased opinion. We're just going to give y'all the real on what's going on with the Grizzlies and the rest of the NBA, including Zion.
Including Zion. I like that. Hopefully he's not listening. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure it'll be fine. But no, I do think that you guys are going to bring a really unique perspective to the show and to the network, largely because we have no other podcasts like this. We were talking about before we went into recording how I'm going to manage having five guests at one time. This is pretty cool. But for folks that haven't listened to your other podcast, Let's Be Real, Sheedy, I'll let you kind of answer this. One of the things I liked most about your guys' show during the interview process was the way that you all played off of each other so well. So how does that work? Is that experience with one another? Is that just timing? You know, again, one of the most unique parts of your guys' show with us, Starting Five, is going to be that multi-person aspect to it. So how do you guys do that so well? Because you do it very well.
All right. Thank you for that compliment. I think it starts first with our captain, Parrish. I call him Captain Sharky, just letting us know, you know, what we'll be talking about throughout the week and giving us actually, hey, you'll lead this example or that example. But the chemistry we have, whether we are together, which we really built that before coronavirus, is still prevalent now to this day, even as we still record. We just always make sure that everyone has their chance to speak about whatever it may be. If we know it's something that's very special to you, such as if it's the Steelers, we'll make sure that those people that are Steelers fans, you know, get a little bit more time to discuss their topic at that point.
Makes total sense. I think that you guys, again, you're tip of the cap to you. When I have two guests on, I have a challenge. You guys have five as your going group every single show, or almost every single show. So that's pretty impressive. All right, let's dive in to the Grizzlies question at hand here. I wrote an article for the blog today on Wednesday, titled Starting with Dylan Brooks. And the point of the article was really focusing in on the idea that now that Justice Winslow is out for the restart, a hip injury that he suffered in practice, it's not as easy as going back to the way things were, because Memphis has invested a lot of time and effort and energy in practice and scheme, team meetings, trying to integrate Justice Winslow because he raised their ceiling in the Orlando bubble. Now Memphis is back to what they were before, and I guess in theory that should be easy to do. But when you're so invested in trying to get somebody involved who can help your team be better, when they all of a sudden aren't there anymore, and Tyus Jones said it in the media availability on Wednesday, Coach Jenkins has alluded to it, it's really going to be something that they have to deal with. So, Trevor, I'll ask you this. Where do you see the Justice Winslow effect really kind of taking off in terms of what the Grizzlies will miss with him now gone? Because again, he never played a minute for Memphis this year, and I get that, but you can't say that he was going to be impactful for the Grizzlies at Disney, and now that he's gone, be like, it's not a big deal.
Well, with Justice Winslow, and I've been a fan of his since his college days at Duke, I think what the Grizzlies are going to miss with his absence is his playmaking ability. And I know just earlier today, there was a footage that came out earlier with Ja Morant catching that ridiculous alley-oop on a backdoor cut just from him playing off the ball. And I think with Justice Winslow being able to utilize his playmaking skills, which gives Ja a little chance to move off the ball a little bit, which makes him even more dangerous, in my opinion, than with him just in the ball in his hands. So I think just that playmaking ability that Justice brings, the additional ball handling, being able to create plays for others, I think that's one thing that's definitely going to be – that's going to show in his absence for the Grizzlies.
I love the idea of Ja Morant playing off the ball. Don't get me wrong. He's a magician with it in his hands. He's near elite already as a passer. Of course, he's an explosive athlete, can get to the basket almost at will. But the really disappointing thing for me is exactly what you just mentioned, the ability to play off ball more. And of course, they have Brandon Clark, who completed that pass, who I do think an area of his game where he can continue to shine and improve is passing. They have Kyle Anderson, who I wrote about in the article, really good facilitator, elite when it comes to assists compared to his usage. They have guys that can still get that done. De'Anthony Melton, excuse me, has some facilitation skill. But I think the biggest thing for me, looking at what they lose in Justice, is that versatility that he was going to bring. And Tev, I'll ask you about that versatility. You know, you could literally see Justice play almost every position on the court except center and be a viable asset for the Grizzlies. His game was that malleable. He had that level of talent. The health concerns are viable at this point, and it makes sense to have that be a part of your thought process when thinking about him. But does it change your perspective of Justice Winslow going into next season, whenever it starts?
Oh, well, first, I think you hit it the nail right on the head. Like, Justice Winslow is such a talent, and he can do just about everything, like you said, besides guard or center. Going into next season, I think it's still kind of early because he still has a lot of time and a lot more to prove to people. As long as, you know, he continues to take care of his body. And, you know, I think one thing that he needs to definitely take care of is his mental, because, you know, he did put so much energy into this team. And I think there's something special with this specific Memphis Grizzlies team that anybody that's not a part of it would feel like they're missing out on a true basketball organization, a true brotherhood. But going forward, I think as long as he takes care of his body, you know, mentally, and, you know, just try to get better on the court, I think the Grizz fans got a lot to look forward to. And coming into it, you know, talking to the Grizzlies team, like, this one player that I was looking forward to seeing for sure just because of his versatility. 1 through 4, he can literally do everything. And just to not have that, I think, would be at a loss, but I think we'd definitely make up for it.
I know our associate editor, and he's taking over the podcast side of things a little bit more in the wake of our hires, Parker Fleming. I know he's disappointed that positionless basketball, that 1 through 4 viability of Justice, goes away a little bit. We're talking with Parrish, Skyler, Trevor, Tev, and Sheedy. They are the five gentlemen that make up the Starting Five podcast. Make sure you're following them on Twitter at Starting Five MEM. I'll let them do their Twitter handles at the end. There are new Memphis Grizzlies podcast over at SBN Grizzlies. Again, that's at Starting Five, the number 5, MEM. They do a great job doing their Let's Be Real podcast. They're bringing that same flair and energy and flow that I was talking about earlier to GBB, and we're excited here in the next week or so for them to make their debut. Parrish, when you look at the guys that Memphis has to fill those minutes, okay, and again, you could, I guess, just look at it and say, all right, well, I guess Kyle Anderson will start. Josh Jackson will keep getting run. De'Anthony Melton will remain important. They'll just go back to the way things were before the season was suspended. But it's not like things were going great, especially for Dylan Brooks, who in February and March was, to use the technical term, hot garbage. He was really bad at basketball. And I do think that that's something that we need to keep in mind, that this is a guy who really wasn't good in his moments in competition in February and March. He had issues there. He couldn't hit shots. One of the main reasons we see him as somebody that has to start with that first group is his capacity to be a threat from three. And he wasn't doing that at all. He really, really struggled in the games and weeks. And like I said, about a month and a half leading up to the season suspension. So I wrote in my piece that you could be a Josh Jackson fan, you could be a De'Anthony Melton fan, you could be a Kyle Anderson fan. Heck, there's people that argue for John Conchar and Grayson Allen. I don't personally think those two are better than the three I mentioned in the article. But sure, I guess you could say those guys have a chance. But I would rather go with Melton, Jackson, or Anderson, just from what I've seen. It starts with Dylan Brooks. If Dylan Brooks doesn't get his stuff together and start making these threes and not being such an abyss at times when it comes to choosing to shoot the ball in very precarious situations, that he never should take those attempts. If he hasn't had a change of perspective and if he hasn't found his shooting stroke, it doesn't really matter who starts to him next to him. Right, Parrish?
Not really. I mean, it all depends on. So think about when he struggled, that was around the time when, I think, Jaren and Brandon Clark both went out. Then the trade happened. So I think just more pressure was put on Dylan at that point in time. But it does start with him. He does have to start back making shots.
And that's great perspective. No, you're exactly right. And I mentioned that in the piece. Jaren Jackson Jr. is obviously an important part of the team. You could argue he's their second or third best player, depending on how Brandon Clark or Jonas Valanciunas are doing on any given night. When Jaren is out, and of course Brandon Clark was out for some time as well, that's going to make Dylan have to take on more responsibility. But he does have a shiny new contract. He does have an extension that the Grizzlies have shown that they're willing to invest in him, and that needs to kind of match his production. Skyler, what's your take on this question of those three names in particular? You have Kyle Anderson, you have Josh Jackson, you have De'Anthony Melton. All three of those guys are going to play, but who do you think stands to benefit most from this restart and the absence of Justice Winslow in terms of time on the court and opportunity to do something with it?
Man, I'm actually going to give you an unpopular name. Josh Jackson. I've grown to be such a Josh Jackson fan ever since he got called up from the G League. I think he's given the Grizzlies great minutes, not even just offensively, but defensively as well, too. And I think with the loss of Justice Winslow, I think Josh Jackson can kind of fill that void for you. I mean, just being able to guard, again, multiple positions, whether it be 1-3, maybe a little bit at the 4 as well, too. But I'm just a huge Josh Jackson fan. I think he showed us great promise before COVID, and I think he may be even just more determined now that Justice Winslow is not going to be on the floor. He may be willing to grab some of those minutes, especially with playoff basketball coming up.
He is most certainly elite when it comes to transition basketball, and that's not hyperbole. Now, granted, it's a very small sample size. Yeah. He's only played about 300 or so minutes with the Grizzlies. He played a ton with the Hustle, of course. But in his 300-plus minutes with Memphis, and I wrote about this in the article, Dylan Brooks, or it starts with Dylan Brooks, starting with Dylan Brooks, excuse me. Per Cleaning the Glass, he's in the 99th percentile among players that have played at least 300 minutes. And in he's 99th percentile, first among forwards, and points added per 100 possessions. He's in the 99th percentile in percentage of steals, leading to transition opportunities. Literally, when I did my research for this article, in every category that Cleaning the Glass has that has to do with transition, he was in the top 10 or so percent of every single one, except for two. And I believe I counted 16 or 17 different ways that Cleaning the Glass measures transition offense. So Josh Jackson literally is the perfect fit for what Taylor Jenkins wants to do as Ja Morant gets out and runs, Brandon Clark gets out and runs. And for a young team in the bubble, they need to have that opportunity to get that kind of easy offense, because that's usually whenever a young athletic team has success, it is in transition. So I think that that is a great argument for Josh Jackson, that he helps with what Ja does best and in theory what Jaren does best. But he doesn't necessarily help with Jonas Valanciunas, Gorgui Dieng, those guys. He's not a perfect fit in that way. You could argue those guys aren't necessarily a perfect fit. Tev, what about you? What do you think? Do you think it's Josh Jackson? Do you think maybe they go back to Kyle Anderson as the starter? De'Anthony Melton, again, will have run. I make the argument in the piece that I think it should be De'Anthony Melton who starts next to Dylan Brooks, and moving Dylan Brooks to the three. I know positionless basketball and all that, but it allows for Melton to take on the more athletic wing on the perimeter and gives Dylan a little bit easier defensive assignment. What do you think, Tev? Who should be that guy who really benefits most from Winslow's absence?
So I've been thinking about this a lot. I saw Twitter kind of go crazy about this earlier. So the starting five for the Grizz, I kind of got my own thoughts about that. I think it really just depends on matchups, especially when you're starting. But for me, I think length is still the long way to go, especially the best defense is the best offense, in my opinion. I'm somebody that I think you should start Ja Morant, Triple J, JV, Josh Jackson, and Kyle Anderson. I think you should start Josh Jackson at shooting guard and bring Dylan Brooks off the bench and let him just go crazy, you know, as a six-man role. I think that'll fit better. And then, you know, him and De'Anthony coming off the bench together along with Tyus, I think that's a triple channel that a lot of the NBA will have trouble with, especially when you bring Brandon Clark with him too. Like, that's a whole starting five with James, you know, going in itself. So I think, like I said, star Josh Jackson, star Kyle Anderson, you get that lean Josh Jackson and have the opportunity to shoot more, because Kyle Anderson is still that D guy. You know, he's that glue guy. He's that Tayshaun Prince that'll make a play that a lot of people won't recognize, but still he'll help you get the dub. So I think that'll be the way to go if I was the if I was coach.
Ah, I'm jealous. I'm jealous. You have more you have more guts than me. Because fellas, I'll be honest with you, the original theme of the article that I started writing at midnight on Tuesday night on the East Coast, when I started writing the piece, I was going to try to make the argument that Dylan Brooks should come off the bench and that it shouldn't be who should start with Dylan Brooks. It should be exactly what you just said. You let Dylan be that reserve who comes in and tries to score like crazy, like Lou Williams, essentially, or Jamal Crawford before Lou Williams. You let Dylan kind of take on that role. Go ahead.
If he's hot, like, you know that you have a hot hand going into the fourth quarter at the end of the games. But if Dylan's having a cold night, then that's where you get to switch it up. And I think Coach Jenkins has done a great job of, you know, looking at what's on the court and making adjustments as such.
And I do think Dylan Brooks long term is a reserve. I do believe that. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes me nervous about, because people are saying De'Anthony Melton might make similar money to Dylan, if not more, in restricted free agency this summer. And of course, the Grizzlies are going to have the opportunity to match that money. But that's a lot of money to put in the shooting guard position for both Melton and Brooks. And to be honest with you, if we're talking about what Melton does well compared to what the schemes of Taylor Jenkins fit, I think Melton might make more sense than Dylan. So maybe that contract is tradable. I don't know if that's something they're interested in. Maybe they think that they can still move Dylan to the bench, have De'Anthony become a starter, and then either count on Justice Winslow or sign or trade another small forward down the road. I think we can all agree that Kyle Anderson, he's a square peg trying to fit into a round hole, right? Like, I like Kyle. I think he's a really good basketball player, but he was signed, in fairness to him, by Chris Wallace in the previous regime, J.B. Bickerstaff. They were trying to be grit and grind 2.0 and all that stuff, and it didn't work. Kyle Anderson can play, but he doesn't fit this particular group. Is that fair to say, Sheedy?
Yeah, I've personally never been a fan of Kyle Anderson, but I don't think he fits exactly what we need to make any type of run as a playoff team. I think we get rid of him. As you talked about Dylan Brooks' contract, he's like a 3-year, $35 million contract, so he's not a person that we're looking to be a foregone starter moving forward. And so maybe he's part of a trade piece as well, if he does well or doesn't do that well over this time. But yeah, Kyle Anderson just doesn't give me what we need offensively. I think that's been something that we've suffered with over years. Even as you go back to the great G&G era that we've had, we just need someone that could be more of a scorer, and I don't see that in Kyle Anderson.
It's definitely especially in Josh Jackson.
You know what?
It's definitely in Josh Jackson, and I think that is one of the things that people get so excited about is that ceiling, right? Because you have Ja Morant, this superstar in the NBA who's only going to shine brighter and brighter. You have Jaren Jackson Jr. who could be that perfect 1B to Ja's 1A. You've got Brandon Clark, who's an elite pick and roll player already, who can finish at the rim with the best of them. You have so many young pieces that when you put Josh Jackson with it, in theory, it makes perfect sense. It's almost like you're completing the puzzle in a way that you weren't expecting to. Because let's be real, like that plug, let's be real here.
Yes, sir.
Josh Jackson was a throw-in when the trade was made, right? Like, it was De'Anthony Melton. It was even the second-round picks. Josh Jackson was a knucklehead. People talked about him potentially being waived, the way that Memphis waived Deion Waiters as part of the Justice Winslow trade, to bring us back full circle here. And obviously, Josh Jackson, aside from, you know, a moment here or there with the hustle, and those obviously weren't that big of a deal because he's still here, he's, for the most part, been a model citizen, done exactly what the Grizzlies and the hustle wanted him to do, and he now has this moment, this opportunity to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and run with it. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do. I wrote an article about a month ago where I chose Josh over Kyle for the 10th man in the rotation when Justice was still in the mix. And somebody on Twitter, somebody said, if you liked Josh better than Kyle as a 10th man, how come you don't like Josh better as a starter than Kyle? And I think De'Anthony is still the better option of all of them. But when it comes to Josh, I really like Josh's scoring punch off of the bench. I really like how he can be that sixth man, kind of like what we were talking about with Dylan Brooks, but it allows Josh to come in, run, kind of be free from, you know, organized sets that start games and that sort of thing. You know, just like a football coach might have their script of plays that they run before they actually get into calling the game the way they want to. Same thing with basketball, not the exact same situation, but it's similar in terms of you go into a game, you have a game plan, you think you can get Jaw off the pick and roll over by the corner to dish out to Dylan for a three. There's all sorts of different things you can do, different types of screens, and you go into the game trying to do that. And then you figure out it doesn't work, or it does work. And that's when you add in a player like Josh Jackson, who can come in and kind of be that chaos creator who really gets things going. Similar to Tony Allen, who the connection was made through the Chris Vernon show in the last couple of days. When they talked to TA, they talked about how Josh went under the wing of Tony while Tony worked with the Hustle down in South Haven. That makes total sense to me. Josh has a more refined or better overall offensive game than TA, but in terms of defense and the way that they play, there's a lot of similarities between the grindfather and Josh Jackson. So I'm excited to watch Josh. I think we all are on the same page that Jackson is probably the one who will stand to benefit the most from the departure of Winslow, because he's going to continue to get opportunity, and it's going to be fascinating to see what he does with it. We're finishing up here with the fellas from the Starting Five podcast, our newest Grizzlies podcast over at grizzlybearblues.com. Make sure you're following them on Twitter at Starting Five, the number five, MEM. I'll let the guys do their individual Twitter here at the end. Make sure you're following Starting Five Mem on Twitter. And again, if you subscribe to GBB's podcast network, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeart, anywhere you can get a podcast, essentially, you can get GBB Live, 3&D with Justin Lewis, Core 4 with Parker and Nate, of course, and then, as I mentioned, the Starting Five. Fellas, I will get you out of here on this. It's prediction time. You know, we've been talking a lot about the bubble. Obviously, the eight seeding games. Memphis has a lot going on in terms of seeding. They are the 3.5 game in front favorite to at least make the play-in. I'm curious as to what your expectations are for this team. So maybe not a direct 4-4, 5-3 prediction if you're not comfortable doing that, but going into this restart, what do you expect from the Memphis Grizzlies? I was asked this on the radio recently, and I said anything less than an appearance in the play-in would be a disappointment. Because if we're being honest with each other, the Pelicans are more talented top to bottom right now than the Grizzlies. The Pelicans were supposed to be better than the Grizzlies. They're not, at least in terms of record right now. So it's okay to sit here and say that New Orleans has more talent. Memphis is further ahead in their rebuild than anybody expected them to be. Same thing with the Portland Trailblazers. Trailblazers made the Western Conference Finals last year. So the fact that Portland is 3.5 games behind, obviously their first concern is getting into the play-in at the very least. But beyond that, it's not shocking that the Lakers and Danny Green would come out and say, okay, we are most nervous about the Portland Trailblazers than we are the Pelicans or the Grizzlies or the Sacramento Kings, who, by the way, are also very much in this mix and are also very good and have created all sorts of problems for Memphis. So I'll start with you, Parrish. What are your expectations for the Grizzlies going into this? Will you be disappointed if they don't make the play-in? Will you be disappointed if they don't make the playoffs? Will you be disappointed if they're in a place where they don't have success against the Lakers? What's your level of thought here?
At this point, playoffs, we head on to the eighth spot. I know the schedule was tough and New Orleans got to ease schedule all of that, but at this point, we got all this Zion hype and they want to get Zion in the playoffs. Damian Lillard whining, doing all his talking. The team I'm more afraid of is Sacramento because, I mean, they won Series 3-1 against us. De'Aaron Fox had Jaw's number, and if he's healthy, that's the team I'm more worried about in a play-in scenario. But yeah, my goal is playoffs.
I'm with you. I'm terrified of the Sacramento Kings. And Sacramento gets two cracks at the Pelicans. So if the Kings can knock off Zion and New Orleans twice, they pretty much separate themselves to be that team that's in the play-in. They have a better shot at doing that organically and controlling their own destiny than even Portland does. Skyler, same question. What are your expectations for Memphis entering these seeding games here in the next week or so?
I'm definitely expecting them to at least get to the play-in game. I believe if they come up in any sort of the play-in game, at least, I feel like it's almost a collapse, just a little bit.
But I definitely expect them to at least get to the play-in game. And I also just expect them just to get to the playoffs. I mean, as far as the Kings, I know you mentioned the Kings. I'm not worried about the Kings. The Portland Trailblazers, they haven't been playing great as of late. And I think the Pelicans are overrated. And I think with Zion Williamson, the Pelicans are 500. And I don't expect much of them even after the eight games. I totally expect the Grizzlies to get there. And I believe they'll be led by Ja Morant, who I believe is extremely hungry at this point. I believe he's read everything that's been said about him. I think he's also seen people say that Zion Williamson should get Rookie of the Year, and I feel as if he's disrespected from that. And I feel as great of a Ja Morant that we saw pre-COVID, I think you'll see maybe even a more hungry Ja Morant even after COVID, and I expect him to get to the playoffs.
That is going to be fascinating to watch play out. Ja, Brandon, anybody who essentially was a rookie, you know, Tyler Hero for Miami, these guys who essentially got an offseason in terms of time. Of course, it wasn't the same. They weren't able to go to the facility as much as they would have. But, you know, Ja Morant gaining 12 pounds, you know, all these guys adding layers to their game. You know, they're essentially starting their second season in the NBA in this restart. So Ja Morant's growth, literally and figuratively, is going to be something to watch for sure. Tev, same question to you. What do you think? Do you see them going, or excuse me, what would disappoint you or make you happy with this restart?
Well, I was one of the crazy people at the beginning of the season to have the Grizzlies in the playoffs, actually. So it's playoffs a bust for me, and I'm gonna go down swinging with it.
Check the receipts on that one.
Yeah, I'm going to need to see some receipts.
We want
to
go back.
We might need to go back on that one, though.
You know, we need to go back,
guys. Yeah.
But Skylar, you hit it right on the head, man, especially with Ja Morant coming back hungry as ever. Look like he added a few pounds. Everybody's looking hungry, but I think the team to look out for will be the Portland Trailblazers. Like, we got Skinny Melo back. You know, we've seen Dame Lillard in playoff time in a team, you know. So I think that the Trailblazers are the team to definitely watch out for, but it's playoffs above to me with the Grizzlies.
Trevor, I got you, right?
I'll take this one. What will make me happy would definitely be for them to lock up the eighth seed and go into the playoffs. I just feel that you guys already mentioned how hungry Ja Morant and the rest of these guys are going to be as they prepare for the restart. I'm not too sold on the Trailblazers as of now. I think they haven't been playing as well as of late, and then they're still trying to work their guys back from injuries. Yusef Nurkic has been out, and he's just now getting back. Yeah, Melo has slimmed down and lost some weight, but is he going to be the Melo of old, or is he going to be old Melo? Pelicans. The Pelicans, I'm not sold on either. I just think all of this is just what hype with Zion Williamson. And then now with Zion having to leave for a family emergency, who knows how their chemistry is going to be affected once he gets back, once the restart starts. And then the team that would definitely scare me is the Sacramento Kings. They've had the Grizzlies number for some time now. As Parrish mentioned, with De'Aaron Fox having Ja's number in the game in the season, Buddy Hield, who I've always been a fan of, is doing his thing. But overall, I do expect the Grizzlies to lock up the eighth seed and to go into the playoffs.
Sheedy, last word on this. Sheedy, what do you think?
Hey, man, I think the Grizzlies not making the playoffs at this point is ridiculous. We got to go. We're all in. We're locked in. We have the – and I'm saying it right now, the preemptuous Rookie of the Year and Ja Morant, a hungry team, and probably the Coach of the Year as well. That'll be leading us. I'm thinking 5-3. See, this is where we need to go in our last eight games. And I'm also thinking that we win at least one or two games. We're not going to get swept when it comes to the playoffs because I've seen how hungry this team is, and we're all on neutral floors. On neutral floor, give me the Grizzlies and give me that fight that Coach is going to bring with us and our Rookie of the Year.
I like the optimism. I like the optimism. So 5-3. Does everybody agree with that? That's the official starting five prediction?
Yep,
that's what we're rolling with.
That's where I'm at.
Okay.
Starting 5-3.
I like it. I like the positivity. All right, Parrish, let's start with you. Tell the folks where they can find you on Twitter.
Y'all can follow me at @DaOne_PSHark.
Excellent. Skylar?
Man, I'm simple with it. It's @_Skylito. Very simple.
Trevor?
Yes, at The Art of Trevor, the first letter of each word is capitalized, except of, because you know it's a preposition.
Good way.
That's awesome. All right, so The Art of Trevor. What about you, Tev? Where can folks find you?
Tev, T-E-V-S-H-A-K-I-R, Tev Shakir.
Excellent, and we'll finish up with you, Sheedy.
Hey, my Twitter is really easy. It's really Sheedy. That's it.
It is a pretty good Twitter handle. And you can follow all these guys, and you can also follow the newest podcast to GBB, the Starting Five, at Starting Five, the number five, M-E-M. I'm excited to have these guys on the podcast network. I think they're going to do a remarkable job for us. As I said, they should be making their debut here in the next week or so. Thank you all for joining me. I really appreciate it. We'll have you guys back on down the line, of course, and hopefully I can join the Starting Five at some point. Thanks to these fine gentlemen for being on the show with me. Thanks to Molly Morrison for being on as well. Thanks to you for listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.